Ladies, welcome back. You are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, the show that helps you love your actual life so that you don't need to run away from home. Let's not do that, at least not this week. Perfection is nonsense, and peace is a perspective shift away. I had one of the hardest weeks I've had in recent memory this week. So it's just interesting that we're talking about plants today and growth mindset. Because this week I have a sweet kiddo who is breaking my heart, just smashing it to pieces. It's been a really heavy and intense week, and I've been begging and pleading with the Lord to soften their heart and just break them in the best possible way and give them wisdom. It's just really been a heartbreaking time, and I've noticed that the Lord in his faithfulness, even though I don't much like it, has been softening my heart and breaking me and giving me wisdom. I don't know if he's doing anything for them, but he's really been doing a lot in me. And I'm just realizing that God is so faithful and so present. And the situations that we're in, even if they're excruciating, are not for nothing. He's not a wasteful God. It's all really intentional. So anyway, didn't mean to start off that heavy, but I'm in a heavy place. So let's do a hard gear shift. And I have a message for the marketing department. And you know who you are. If you are listening to this in your ear holes, you are the marketing department. If this is your first episode you've ever listened to, I'll give you a pass. You don't have to be part of the marketing department. If this is your second episode, yeah, you're in. If you want to be in the mom gang that we're forming, you've got to do this. This is like your gang initiation. But anyway, marketing department, I have an idea. We're launching a new initiative. And this one is actually quite cheap. It won't cost you a lot of money. All I need you to do at all times is to have an X-Acto knife on you, because that's regular. Kids are not drawn to shiny things that are pointy and could hurt them. So it's a safe thing for you to always have in your purse. So when you eat a meal, so I'm only asking you to do this 3 times a day. I mean, consider how much you're on social media on your phone. If I'm asking you to do something 3 times a day, it's reasonable, right? Let's just get that out right now. 3 times a day, I want you to get that X-Acto knife out when you're having a meal. You can do it before or after the meal, even during the meal. I'm very flexible. But I just need you to carve MSW in the table. You're already there. You know your kids eat slow. You know you're trying to get them to just eat. Please eat 2 more bites of chicken nuggets and 3 more carrots. Okay, fine, 2 more carrots. So while you're having the endless food battles, just carve MSW. That will elicit so much curiosity in the next person who sits at that table. Now, I need you to know, it doesn't matter if you're in your friend's home. It doesn't matter if you're in a place of business, if you're in a fancy hotel, MSW. Okay, so if you want to be in the mom gang, like I said, this is a test of your commitment to struggle well. Okay, so I would like pictures, and I would like you to tell your friends to do it, and I would like there to be peer pressure and lots of carving. Okay, you're welcome for that amazing idea. Another thing I want to say I'm very excited about is this is episode 199. It's a big deal, guys. 200 is next week. And sweet Rebecca and Katie planned the whole thing. The next episode is going to be 3 of us. And I don't even know what we're going to do because they are in charge of it. So make sure to tune in next week for the 200th episode. And finally, before we get started, you might have seen on Instagram, but we have Mom Struggling Well shirts. They are made. They are baseball tees, 3/4 sleeves, just going to be perfect for fall. You can get sleeves that are red, and then Mom Struggling Well is printed in red, or sleeves that are navy, and then the printing is in navy. But they're lovely, and they're on sale starting in September. They're incredibly soft shirts with the unfinished hem in the bottom. They're just cute and so comfortable. You're not going to want to change out of this shirt. And I want to do this just to kind of celebrate 200 episodes. And so After we pay my friend Amber, who's making them, one of my neighbor girls, everything else is going to the Moms We Love Club, which is my friend Angelie's organization that she started to help moms who are in long-term hardship. They raise money for them every month. You can find them on Instagram, the Moms We Love Club. Anyway, I love what she's doing. I love Angelie. I love her ministry. And I gotta say, a lot of us are struggling hardcore and like our financial needs are at least met. So can you imagine like long-term hardship and you don't have the money for it? Those moms are legit struggling well. I mean, and so are we, right? But wow. So I can't wait to just bless those moms who are struggling well by buying shirts that say mom struggling well so that we can all just encourage each other and bless each other, and it's going to be fun. So anyway, stay tuned for those in September. I got to say, I really loved this conversation with Dusty. It is about plants. I know that seems weird. I know it feels like, why are we talking about plants? But you will see and you will love it. So let's get started. Good morning, Dusty. How are you?
I'm just dandy.
Good. So you said you have a friend in from out of town.
I sure do.
Do you like having people over? Is it stressful?
Yeah, it's not. No, we really like it. We are host people to the core. Okay. But it's funny because I am super introverted, and which people don't expect because I'm real loud.
Okay.
so people are like, well, you're not introverted. Calm down. But I am. And my husband is really extroverted. So you can tell when people leave, I'm like, oh, okay, it's time for like 3 days of napping. I'm so exhausted. And Brian's like, let's go see more people.
Okay. Yes.
Very different.
We love hosting. We don't have an extra bedroom though. So that kind of cramps our style a little bit. But we kick the kids into sharing a room with each other. So, you know, whatever. But I would love to have like a beautiful guest room. But I just don't. It's fine. Okay. So you love plants.
Oh, I sure do.
You sure do. Well, go ahead and introduce yourself. And the plants will come up, I'm sure.
Oh, it will. It for sure will. Yeah, so I'm Dusty. I live in the Northwest, in the Pacific Northwest, in Olympia. And my husband is a police officer, and we have two little girls. We have a three-year-old named Iris and an almost two-year-old named Sloan. And I teach people how to keep their houseplants alive. And so I use that as a way that we get to take that conversation a bit deeper and talk about God's creation and how we can grow well as people, drawing parallels from how God grows nature. Because there's just so many beautiful things that God has to teach us through the things that he's created to spoil us with and to love on us with. And I think houseplants are one of those just incredible gifts because we get to bring a tiny piece of that outdoor nature inside and be reminded of just how intentional God is and how much he really wants to love on us. That said, it is a houseplant. So if you don't like houseplants and you don't want plants in your house, you super don't need houseplants to have a thriving relationship with Jesus Christ.
Totally. Okay.
But so they're fun.
They are fun. I do want to ask though, did you ever think teaching people how to keep their plants alive? I can assume that that would be a thing that would seem like people don't need me to teach them how to do that. But I'm glad that you have done it because obviously there is so much more to it and people can keep their plants alive.
Yeah, I think it's as I started, it all kind of began because my husband asked me, Brian said, like, what would you want to do for free forever? Like if nobody was paying you, what would be the thing you would do forever? And I was like, well, I would garden, but gardening is not a real job. He's like, hold up, Dusty. How do you think the whole world eats? Like, calm down. Gardening is for sure the first job ever had, like ever in the world. And I was like, oh, okay, right. I don't know. I think that because it's not like preaching on a stage and being real fancy, I just assumed that it wasn't valuable, which is a lie I was believing.
Right. But it also, if it comes easy to you, then it feels like it should come easy to other people, but it doesn't.
Right. Oh, no. Yeah, it doesn't. And I didn't realize that what I was really good at, people had a really hard time with. Yeah. And as I like pressed into it further and further, I saw a lot of shame people carry with not being able to keep a houseplant alive. And I thought, well, that's so silly. You don't need a houseplant. Like it is for fun. It is extra. And I hope you enjoy it. But if you don't, just throw that baby out. You don't need that nonsense. And so I saw just some big parallels there between plant care and like personal growth, because when we aren't growing in the way that we want to grow, or we're not achieving the things we want to achieve, we just feel so much shame and so much frustration. But maybe it's the winter and there's just not enough sun to put out a new leaf, and we just need to take a chill pill and let ourselves be in a season of rest, which is like the major theme of my entire life, of God just saying, you have great ideas, Dusty, but you need to simmer down.
Okay. I love that. And it's true. Every time I go outside, usually it's because like my courtyard is overgrown and I can't, it's like taking over my life, the plants that are wild out there. But so I approach it like, oh, I can't believe I have to do this right now. And then I'm out there and I have all these spiritual experiences. It's the craziest thing. It's the craziest thing. Okay, so basics. What's your very favorite houseplant right now?
Yeah, so that's a really hard question. That'd be like, I don't know, what's your favorite chocolate?
Okay.
Is that even a thing? No, all the chocolate's great. But I do have a couple that I really like to recommend to people, and because they're extra for a few things. So the term easy care houseplant is thrown around a whole lot, and I don't super love that term. And the reason is because the way we keep our houseplants alive and the kinds of care that's involved is so different from home to home to home, because there's so many factors involved. So what might be a really easy plant for me to grow here in the Northwest might be a really hard plant to grow in Texas, just because of the same plants don't grow in those places. The beautiful things is our homes provide pretty similar conditions for all plants. So that's why most houseplants are tropical, because they like very even temperatures. They like a lot of indirect sunlight growing underneath like jungle trees and stuff.
Okay.
But that in mind, there are a few plants that are more durable than others and more forgiving and more communicative. So by that, I mean, by that, I mean that if you just mess up all of the things for that houseplant and you don't water it forever and the growth is horrible and leggy and it just looks spindly and ugly, like you do a few things and it'll perk back up. So that's what I mean by forgiving and communicative, just that it will start to show you signs when the care isn't right. So that's why I don't recommend succulents as a houseplant.
Which is unfortunate because they are all the rage right now.
Oh, they are super trendy. But people start to feel really frustrated and they come to me and they're like, I can't even keep a succulent alive. And I'm like, well, that's because succulents grow in the middle of the desert. And hopefully your home is not like the middle of the desert.
That's a great connection. I have never made that.
Yeah. And the reason I mean, you can for sure get them to grow indoors, and there's so many more succulents than we realize. Like, snake plants are technically a succulent, like botanically speaking, because succulent just means it holds water in the leaves of the plant instead of in the root system. And so there's like way more succulents than we think. But the succulents that come to mind when we say succulent, they're not communicative. So they'll grow and it'll look like they're growing really, really fast all of a sudden. And it feels like this big booming growth. But what's happening is those leaves are growing further and further and further apart. And it's just reaching for the sun. It's like starving. It's a process called attiliation.
Wow.
So it's starving for sunlight and then it can't get it. And then it feels like it suddenly died. Like, all out of nowhere. But really, for months, it's been saying like, hey, I'm dying. I need sunlight. Help me out, sister. And then it just dies, which is another way that I think I can't help but see the like parallel between like human growth there, because we feel like we're doing all the right things. We're like getting the promotions. We're going forward. But really, we're walking further and further away from God in that oftentimes, not always, obviously. Yeah. But I think that's like why it's important to check in with ourselves, and just like it's important to check in with our plants. Not that we are as important as plants in this situation, but you see the parallels I'm drawing here.
Yeah, I think it's so good. I love it. Okay, so what plants would you recommend?
Yeah. Yeah. So the biggest plant I always recommend is a pothos. Some people say pothos, and particularly a golden pothos or pothos. And the reason is because one, they're super, super beautiful. And they're like that classic house plant. They're also called the devil's ivy, is another really common name. And the reason they're called that is because they're pretty hard to kill. And they're very forgiving. They come back if you totally mess it all up. And they require, as long as there's light in a room, they will chug along. There's like very, like it would prefer more light than less light, but that's true of most plants. And then for watering, just wait until the soil is dry to like your second knuckle, like stick your finger in the soil.
Okay.
And always feel the soil before you water. This is true of every houseplant. Because it'll trick you into thinking it needs more water or less water, but the soil tells a different story.
I never put my finger in.
Oh, start putting your fingers in the soil, lady.
Okay. All right. So golden pothos.
Mm-hmm. Another really good one is a snake plant, also called mother-in-law's tongue, which cracks me up. But they look like little swords or snakes sticking out of the soil.
Okay.
And they're really trendy right now, too. And there's a ton of different varieties within snake plants. And they all require very, very similar care. So they're typically referred to as the, like, best plant for low light conditions, which is true, kind of, because they're actually from West Africa. And you can't tell me in West Africa that it's low light. Even sure. Under the shade of all those trees, there's still going to be more light than the darkest corner in your living room. So just bear in mind, when we bring houseplants in, we have grandiose expectations of what that plant will do for us and how mm-hmm. it's going to revolutionize our life or our space mm-hmm. or this beauty. And then it dies. And then we feel really frustrated, or it doesn't grow. And we expected it to grow really large. So having some, like, basic, just sort of checking in and having good expectations of yourself and of your houseplant, like what it's going to do in your space, is just going to help you sort of be set up for plenty of success in that way. And so for a snake plant, they grow really, really slowly. And then if you put it in low light conditions, because it can't complete photosynthesis, which is the process that it makes its own food. So it produces its own food with a few elements. And if it's in a dark corner, it can't photosynthesize. So it's just not going to put out any growth, because it will prioritize the growth that's already established yes. before putting out
staying
new
alive.
Growth.
Yes.
Yeah, it needs to stay alive. So if you want your snake plant to be nice and giant and big, but you put it in a dark corner, it's probably not going to happen. So just buy a giant and big snake plant and then put it in the spot that's a lower light. Because otherwise it will never get to the size that you want it to get to if it's not in, like, prime growing conditions.
Yeah. I want to say a quick thank you to Third Love for their support of the show. I was a customer of Third Love bras before they ever became an ad sponsor. They have more sizes than most other brands. They have 70 different sizes. They also have half cup sizes. It makes a big difference. Also, it's very convenient. They have an app that will find your exact size bra. It's called the Fit Finder. You can order it and then try it on at home. You do not have to go to the fitting room anymore and have anybody measure you, because that feels weird. So over 12 million women have taken the Fit Finder quiz. It is ridiculous how right on it is. My favorite part is that you have 60 days to try it on, wash it, wear it, put it to the test. And if you don't love it, return it and they will wash it and give it to a woman who needs an amazing bra. You really have nothing to lose. And I have made returns from them. They are quick and easy. Zero hassle involved. Your Third Love bra will be the most comfortable bra you own. The straps don't slip. There are no tags to itch you. Third Love knows that there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. So go to thirdlove.com/SWP to find your perfect fitting bra, and you'll get 15% off your purchase. That's thirdlove.com/SWP for 15% off today. Okay, so speaking of prime growing conditions, so what I've heard is that a plant in a pot should have some, like, rocks at the bottom. How much false? Okay. Tell me about how I soil my plants.
So all you need in a pot is potting soil, and that's it.
I see you make it way too easy. I need to make it complicated.
It's way more simple than people. I've seen people wrap the roots in moss balls and add rocks in there and add all kinds of additives to the soil. And if you want to get fancy with it, by all means, go on ahead, but just know that it makes it harder for your plant. We've been told that it is going to improve drainage, but it doesn't.
Okay.
It doesn't improve it at all, because it takes away some volume for the roots to be, because they can't grow very well in those rocks. They're not surrounded by the moisture. That said, always plant your plants in a pot with a drainage hole. If it doesn't have a drainage hole, and you have rocks at the bottom, it doesn't improve drainage because the water's still sitting down there in the rocks. And then it just starts, it creates something called root rot. And the top of the soil will look like it's dry and needing water, because it probably does. And the bottom of the soil is super soggy and wet. And then your plant will look like it's both overwatered and underwatered, because it is. And you don't know how to care for it because all of the things are going wrong. And then you're like, well, shoot, I'm a plant killer. I can't do this. And you just give up.
Okay. All right. Now, my sister is super pumped about this interview. And so she asked me to ask you about propagating. And I said, I thought that was like something that happened in math. I don't even know what we're talking about.
It does sound like a math term. I mean, it is kind of, because you're multiplying plants.
Okay, that's true.
So
yeah. When any time that I like pull plants apart, which is what she told me it was, it doesn't go well. So tell me how to do that.
Yeah. So propagating covers a wide variety of things. It's like planting seeds is propagating, like rooting cuttings. Like if you take a cutting off of your plant and put it in water so that it forms roots, that's propagation.
Okay. I need to stop and talk about that because.
Okay.
So I could take a plant, just cut it off and put it in water, and it will grow roots, and then I can plant it. You're telling me this is what I can do?
Sort of. If you, as long as you take the right kind of a cutting. So there are several types of cuttings to take, but as long as, so here's a fancy word for you. It's totipotency. Totipotency.
I use that all the time. Just kidding.
I mean, I assumed so. Totipotency is how, basically, in that little section of a plant, if it's very totipotent, it will put out more roots. It has the right kinds of cells to form roots and new growth. And so one of the most totipotent things is a seed, because it has all the cells it needs to put out roots and shoots up above the soil, growth above and below the soil. When you take off a cutting from a plant, so let's use a pothos as an example, because that is really good one to practice leaf cutting propagation on. Which is another reason I recommend it, because I can teach a lot of lessons from this one plant.
Yeah, yeah.
But so when you take a cutting, if you were to pull out your long, the like vine, for lack of a better term here, where each petiole, which is the stem that the leaf attaches to the vine on.
Yes.
Do you follow?
Yes.
There's a little bump. It's like a, it's like a knuckle, and that's called the node. So the node is the part of that vine that is the most totipotent. So when you cut that vine, it's hard to do without, like, I'm pretending to hold a vine here.
I see it. Yeah, no, it's helpful.
When you cut it, you want to cut below the node. I would say just like a centimeter or so below, because you want that node to be attached to the petiole, which is attached to the leaf. And then that is where the roots will come out of.
Yes. And I in high school worked at a flower shop. And you never wanted leaves to be like in, like submerged in water. Yeah. Do you then take the leaves off and leave the node?
No, so I suggest cutting a couple nodes down and then removing the lower leaf, so that 1 to 2 nodes are in the water, but you still need a leaf, at least one leaf attached to it, because it has to photosynthesize. That's how it's creating its own food.
Yeah.
So when they're cut like that, they kind of go into a survival stage, and they don't need as much sun as the plant does when it's not cut. Because instead of focusing on creating a ton of new growth, it focuses all of its growth inward to produce those roots so that then it can photosynthesize well later on.
I love that. And you just stick it in a plant.
In water. Yeah. So you can propagate in like several different mediums. So you can do it in water, in soil. I've seen people do it in peat moss. But the water for me is the one I recommend the most, simply because you don't have to stress out about whether or not that soil is moist the whole time, because if it dries out, it will just stop. It will just die. That said, the roots that form within water are different than the roots that form within a soil medium.
Okay.
Because it's just processing, like in the soil, once it's established, the roots aren't surrounded by water like forever. Pothos are a plant that can grow aquatically or in soil, but when we grow them in our homes, we're going to grow them in soil. We're not going to just like keep an aquarium hanging from the ceiling.
No, that'd be heavy.
Yeah, and real dangerous. Yeah. But so because of that, the roots that form in the water are different than in the soil because of the way that it absorbs water. So it creates kind of a mechanism within the cells of the roots to block some of that water from coming in, so it doesn't just like flood the plant with too much water and basically drown it. And then it starves because it can't photosynthesize.
Okay, but then it can be transferred to soil.
So yeah, so just when you transfer it for the first maybe week or so, keep that soil extra moist. It doesn't need to be soggy. It just needs to be moist so that it can kind of acclimate to a new growing medium.
That makes sense. Okay, so how many plants do you have in your house?
Right now I have not a lot, but not a lot for me is a lot for most. So probably between 20 and 30 right now. I used to have well over 100, but like sold a bunch and gave some away. And I think that I have like a, as much as I love plants, I have like a plant limit because then everything is cluttered and messy and I don't have good ways to like store them all to make them look nice. And I have a 1-year-old who wants to eat all of the leaves and the dirt. So as much as like I want her to get her hands dirty, there's got to be some boundaries.
Yes. Have you always been having this relationship with plants, this love of plants?
I have, yeah. It's kind of a generational gift. So my grandma, well, and it goes back further, but I didn't know my great grandma. So my grandma and my mom and my aunt and my dad. So we like all love plants in one form or another, whether it be like herbs for culinary uses or like my mom super loves her vegetable garden and my grandma really loves her flower garden. So I have grown up just eating dirt, just like my toddler.
I love it. You said another thing that has run in your family is some depression, anxiety, things like that. That's something that you definitely struggle with. And you mentioned a concern that you're going to pass that on to your daughters. And I think that's something that so many of us can identify with, not wanting the things that are really hard in our lives to be something that we have our kids. We love them and we don't want them to struggle in the ways that we've struggled. Mm-hmm. But you're also really big into the growth mindset. Like there's a possibility of new life and new directions. So talk to me about depression and anxiety and what's helping and what are you learning?
Yeah. So it's been a hard season to say the like it in the softest way. And I don't think I realized how hard it was until honestly a few months ago. My Brian, that's what I'm going to stick with. Brian made a comment and he said it in like a really sweet way. It wasn't meant to be attacking or rude, but he basically said like, you're never positive anymore. Mm-hmm. And that struck me real deep because my parents divorced when I was little. I was like thrown back and forth between homes and they did their very best to love me, but divorce is traumatic. And it's not the design. And anytime sin comes in, it's just, we live hard lives because of sin. And so that was very much my life is going back and forth between two very different homes. And God did a lot of beautiful redemption through that and some really a lot of goodness. But I say that to say like, I had a pretty hard childhood, but I was still able to see a lot of positives. Like God just blessed me with an incredible gift of faith that I have no words. Like that was not my doing. Like he used me to bring my dad to Christ as like a 6-year-old. So like he just put me in some really big positions of leadership by like doing even as a child. And so I know that like that gift of positivity is not my doing. Like that's all from Jesus. I didn't have a lot of things to be positive about. That was all God. And so when Brian said that to me, I was like, well, shoot, I am like really not myself then. Like if I can't even find something to be positive about when Brian has an incredible job and we have a big, beautiful house and my two really healthy kids, despite like some really hard circumstances when they were tiny, like I should find things to be positive about right now. And I just couldn't. After he said that, I was like, okay, well, something has to change. And I started noticing just a few days after that, some symptoms of anxiety in my oldest daughter. She's just 3, but I could see her like clam up and shake and like not be able to speak and things that I do just in all my daily life. And was like, okay, well, between what Brian said and what I'm seeing in my daughter, like I'm the one that has to change. Like it's not anybody else that is doing the wrong things. Like it's me right now. And not that depression is a wrong thing, but it is something that we have to take initiative to heal from.
Yeah.
Nobody else can heal that within me or help me overcome that besides like me taking a step forward and asking for it. So I did. I had gone to a counselor's on and off for a while, but I don't think I ever said like, hey, I think I have depression. I was just like, these are the things that are hard. And they were like, okay, we'll do these things. And I was like, okay, I did them. See you later, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, and so it was very like transactional, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But I went to a general health practitioner, and they made me fill out that like super tacky form of like, yeah. And screening. I hated it.
Yeah, it
just feels so stupid. Like, you know what questions are going to mark you as have depression or anxiety. Yeah. And I like didn't want that. I wanted to just, I've lied my way through that form so many times. Mm-hmm. And so this time I was like, okay, if I am going to see something change and if I want the like hurts that I experienced as a kid to not happen for my kids, like they're going to get hurt because we're people. But if I can, whatever I can do to help them is what I want to do. So I for sure was not doing it for myself. I could not fathom being worth the effort that it took to do all those things. I had other people to take
depression.
Care of.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. I just did it for my kids and I just, that was enough. And I'm really proud of myself for doing those things because I'm starting to be in like a sweet season. It's not gone. I kind of go back and forth. It doesn't feel like a cure all, but through that, my doctor was like, you have depression and pretty severe anxiety. And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, I know already.
I finally just stopped lying to you.
Yeah, I know. For real. Gosh, I don't know what I was thinking. Well, I for sure do. It was some serious self-preservation.
Yeah. Nobody wants that to be part of their story. Not even for a little bit.
No, especially because this feels horrible to say out loud, but everybody I feel like is dealing with mental health stuff right now. And I didn't want to be just another like young white mom who's dealing with depression and over-exaggerating. I was so fearful that people would think I was making this up for more likes or for more whatever. Mm. And I wanted to like glorify God through hardships and through struggles and through suffering, but I couldn't see how that was going to even be possible with this like generic illness. And that feels so shallow to say out loud, I think. And I think I felt the same way as a kid through divorce. So many of my friends were experiencing divorce, and that doesn't take away the like depth of suffering that is brought through that kind of tragedy. But anyways, so through that, going to the doctor, and they did a ton of like vitamin tests too. I found out I was severely deficient in vitamin B, which is a precursor to create serotonin. So she was like, no wonder you're feeling real sad all the time because your body can't be happy without serotonin.
Okay, yes.
And I was like, oh, cool. Okay. So I started taking, before we went to like mental health medication, she was like, I want you to get on some vitamins and like just be really intentional, like get outside more, do all of the like things.
That's hard in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, for reals. It's so dark here all the time.
Do you have one of those lights? Don't people sit under lights there?
No, they do sit under lights here. I don't have one, but I should. Hmm. My plants would love it too.
I was going to say, like, the whole house would be better off.
We would all benefit from it, really.
So did the vitamins help?
Yes. Yeah. I actually had forgotten to take them for like 3 weeks. So I'm taking like vitamin D and two different B vitamins, I think 12 and 6, and then a slew of other things that I was deficient in. And I forgot to take them for like 3 weeks. And I was feeling shaky and my chest was hurting all the time. Mm. And I would get tension headaches in like a flash. And I was just overly stressed. And Brian was like, hey, I just want to check in with you. You seem like something's going on.
Yeah.
And he's like, how are you taking your vitamins? And I was like, oh, dang it.
Yeah. Nope. Okay.
So it is helping, which is great. I don't think it's, I still have a lot of behavioral things that need to be sussed out, for lack of better way to say that. In
that,
there's
a
lot of, yeah. So there's like a lot of ways that I have coped that have been good things because it's kept me healthy and alive through depression, but it's not healthy now that I'm like pursuing health. So the best thing that I can say, actually, so when I get in a fight with, like in an argument with my husband, instead of being able to like say the emotions that I feel and be like, this is why I feel X, Y, Z. I can't, like my body can't say those words. I can think it in my head, but I can't get them out of my mouth. And so I like go into this defensive mode where I feel like I have to like stand up for myself and protect myself. And so I attack or I say something harsh and then he says something harsh and it's just like this horrible spiral downwards. And then it gets blamed on depression. And then it's like this whole thing and then everything feels like my fault, which isn't true. Neither of us are handling the situation very well in that moment. But things that have been helping are like taking steps back because then I can see like, oh, this is me believing lies again. This is me thinking the worst and assuming the worst in Brian. And Brian's probably doing the same right now in me because he's had to deal with my like inability to speak clearly for so long that he feels defensive about it. So it just makes this huge messy cycle. So the biggest things that are helping us is like taking a step back, which is just general advice for every situation of life. Yes. But taking a step back. And then the other thing that's really helping is I'm getting back into like prayer journaling, which is something I used to do all the time. And it stopped when I got married for whatever weird reason. I don't know why.
Okay.
Maybe because I had somebody to talk to about everything. So I just stopped. I'm not sure. But it's really helped because then I have a way I can get the things out of my brain, the like emotions that I'm feeling or the hurts or the lies that I'm believing, and put them on paper and be like, oh, that's kind of ridiculous. I see now why that's a lie.
Yeah, yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good. It's interesting that you would say that you get to where you can't talk because you're incredibly articulate. And so, hey. I don't know. I think that's kind of interesting. And clearly an anxiety thing, right? Mm-hmm.
It is, yeah. Because I'm very good with words. And I really like a good stage. I would love to like be a speaker someday. Like those are all goals and dreams of mine. But when I get anxious, I like start to shake. I immediately start to sweat. Like I can't say words. I can hear them in my head. And then the conversation that goes on in my head is like, you know how to speak. Like you are a grown adult. You have good things to say. Clearly you're not really as good as you think you are because you can't say them. And I like going through this like horrible cycle of like self-deprecation because I can't do the thing that I really love to do.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a good example of what anxiety would feel like to somebody who doesn't experience that. Thanks for sharing that. I wanted to talk to you. We're almost out of time. I can't believe that went by really fast. The birth of your, I believe, first daughter, you shared was really traumatic. You were preeclamptic, and then you were rushed to a C-section. You ended up having seizures. You ended up not even remembering that you had a baby for a couple of days. You had to be reminded that you had a baby. And so the whole trauma surrounding that really changed the way you experienced your child for initially. And I just wanted to share that because I think mothers think it needs to be great. And if it's not great, it's them. And that's not true. But that's the way that my daughter coming into my life was incredibly traumatic as well. And so it's hard to attach and connect. And then you feel like you're the worst person in the world. And so speak to that.
Yeah, it was hard. Brian had to like pull up FaceTime. He went into the NICU and I was still in my like hospital room. We were in like separate wings. Why on earth they put mothers in separate wings from their babies is beyond me. But we were in separate wings of the hospital and he would FaceTime so that I could see Iris in her tiny little baby crib. And I like didn't believe him for a very long time. I was like, no, I'm not even pregnant. How could I have a baby? This doesn't make any sense.
You didn't remember even being pregnant?
No, it was always a short few moments. It was just like, and Brian was like, yes, you were. We just got back from your baby shower. And then we went to the hospital and I was like, oh, right. Like, wow. Oh, right. And it all came like flooding back to me really, really fast. And it happened a couple of times. I think it's kind of more of a memory that Brian gave to me because I didn't even remember that I had forgotten that many times until Brian was like, you kept forgetting. Wow. Because I had three seizures. When one on the amount of magnesium that I was on is pretty unheard of and insane, but I had three back to back. So it was really hard. I didn't get to hold her for the first couple of days cause I was just too weak. I would have dropped her. And I didn't get to nurse her or like be even in the same room as her. They wheeled me over once. I have a vague, like fuzzy memory, but I don't remember seeing her. I only remember my stuffed animal on my lap, like being wheeled to her, which is something that really ate me up because like, how could I not remember my first encounter with my baby? But I remember my childhood stuffed animal. Like that's horrible. And I felt really, really awful about it I think part of me still feels bad about it. I still have a hard time with it.
But it's so crazy how we beat ourselves up. Your brain was doing a different thing. It's not like you said, I'd love to not remember that. That doesn't matter.
Yes. No. Yeah. Yeah. I think the thing that God has taught me the most is how sweet he is to us in hard seasons, because I think if I had remembered everything at once, it would have been too painful for me to deal with. Remembered that like I had to have the seizures and that I had to have an emergency C-section and that all of that. Like if I had to remember it all in that exact moment when I like finally came to, it would have been too much.
Because you didn't want a C-section at all. You were anti-C-section, which I know a lot of women are.
Yeah, I like was not the kind of kid who planned my wedding. I was the kind of kid who planned my like motherhood life. Like I was like, this is who I am going to be. So birth is a huge part of that. And I did so much reading and research, and I had a pretty open mind about the whole thing, just in that, like, I don't want to give myself a lot of rules. I want to be able to change my mind if I need to when I get there, because I know that that's important. But I'm not going to look into C-sections at all, because there is no way that's ever happening to me. Like, at all. I was terrified of it. One reason could possibly be because Brian one time told me that they leave the like epidermis, that's your skin.
The epidural.
Thank you. Yes. In the like needle in your back. He said that they leave it in your back. He was wrong. Clearly. Wow. And I was like, that can never happen to me. This baby's made in my body forever.
No offense, but you don't need to be taking medical advice from a police officer.
Right,
maybe.
Right. Yeah. For real. My nails really scary. Oh my goodness.
That's so funny.
But yeah, so the thing that God taught me is just how little control I have and how that can be a good thing. I think for a long time I was like, okay, so I'm not supposed to have control, but that sucks. Like, this is the worst lesson you've taught me thus far, God. Like, why?
Very intense.
Can't I have control, especially over like our kids? Because our control isn't there to like be a dictator over their lives. It's to give them the goodness and to like love on them and kind of in the same way we take too much control of our plants. We like really want to like lord over it, but not from a place of malice, but only from a place of like goodness and love. And I think that God was saying like, hey, that's not loving. I don't lord over you. You need to not lord over your kids. And even in something as simple, but really it's big, as our birth experiences, when they don't go the way that we want them to go, it's hard no matter what, whether you have 3 C-sections, whether you struggle with infertility, whether you have an easy birth, but you had to have medication when you were hoping you didn't have to. Like, birth is just hard because it isn't supposed to be this painful. Like,
yeah, true. So what would you say to a mom whose birth didn't go like she wanted and she was going to breastfeed and then it didn't work?
I would just say that it's hard and that it's okay that it's hard, that this season doesn't last forever. And that sounds tacky because people say that all the time, but do try and find your very best to find things to be positive about in that season of hardness. Because I guarantee you, if you look for it, you can see God's sweet hand, even in something as traumatic as forgetting your child, like forgetting that you even were pregnant. Like, I can look back now, in that moment I couldn't. And which was okay. I think it was fine that I couldn't see the goodness in that moment. But now I can look back and see why that was a sweet thing and why that was me relying on, it forced me to rely on Christ, because I don't think I could have on my own. Yeah. So I would just say it is hard. Don't lie to yourself and tell yourself it's not. And don't believe other people when they say that you should have everything together, because you don't need to.
Yeah. I would say that most birth stories are at least half. I don't know. I didn't really have one. I didn't have one. I feel like they're usually don't go according to plan. And there are things about them that are hard and not what you would have hoped for.
Yeah. Yeah. The beautiful thing, I think God gave me such a gift with my second birth. We were wanting to be able to have a VBAC, but couldn't because we saw a lot of midwives. And then at the end saw a doctor, and the doctor was like, okay, I'm going to lay it out really plainly for you. You are so young that I was 22 when I had Iris and then had Sloan like a year and a half later. And she was like, because you're young and you didn't have like a vaginal delivery before you had a C-section, we don't know how your body is going to react. So one of two things could happen. Either your uterus could explode.
Oh, okay.
And then you and your baby will probably die. Or the baby could get stuck in some way because we don't know how strong your uterus is. And then your baby will have serious mental health problems. And I was like, oh, so if something goes wrong, it's either like severe mental health issues or death. And he's like, yes. And I was like, well, I think I'll have a C-section then. And I didn't want it. I was terrified. I remember in the room the second time, because it wasn't such a rush, I had more time to like think about it. And I am very claustrophobic, like very. And they have your arms spread out like you're like on a cross and it's flat. And your feet, your ankles are together and your feet are out like you're on a cross. And it's this super thin, and I'm pretty small, but it's this really, really tiny thin bed. So it feels like you're going to fall off. And I'm very small person and I felt like I was going to fall off. So like, I don't know how big that bed is exactly because I can't see it, but I can feel it on my back still. Like I think about it.
Why do they make your hands be out?
I think it's because, well, they put you, they knock you out from like your hips or like from like your chest down. And so I think it just must have, I couldn't pick up my head either though. So I don't know.
Interesting. But they do want you to be awake so you can experience it.
Well, I think that they want you to be awake because there's less complications. It's safer for you if you're awake, but you can't see anything because you're laying and you can only see forward. You're laying down. So you can't even pick up your head to like see your chest, let alone like your stomach or anything. But that said, I got to have a clear like partition between. And at first I was like, no, that sounds horrifying because there's like blood and guts down there. I don't want that nonsense. And then at the very last second, I was like, no, I need it. And so they rushed really fast and put it on so I could hear her. And I kept trying to get up, but I couldn't because of all the medication. And I did the same thing with Iris too. Like my brain was trying to get me up out of the bed, but like couldn't move my body. I imagine it's what being stuck in cement feels like. I asked really quickly for it and they like hustled. They worked so hard to get that little clear partition up for me. It was so sweet. And they put Sloan up on my chest, even on that clear partition. And like, she got to like hold my cheek and like, I got like a moment with her, which is all I wanted. And the only reason I didn't want a C-section is because I couldn't have like that chest to chest time. But with my second, he like just really, it was such a sweet gift that I got to experience that with her. Cause I didn't think I was ever going to be able to have that.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
There's always redemption.
There is. Yeah.
So okay. So we are almost out of time, but I did want to have you tell us about your course, your houseplant course.
Yeah, I'm just so stinking excited about it. It's called Get Planty Houseplant Foundations, and it is an online course to teach you how to keep your houseplants alive and then also to grow well as a human being. So I do look at it through the lens of crediting the creator and celebrating the beauty that he's just spoiled us with. So I go through, it's more than just, the reason I don't call it a basics course, because it's more than just, this is how you keep your houseplant alive. So I go into words like totipotency and what photosynthesis means, because I want to equip you with like a natural green thumb. Like I want you to be able to look at a plant and say, oh, it probably needs XYZ, or look at a plant and be able to say, this will do good in my house. And here's why I know that. So I want to be able to take it a tiny bit step further than just, this is how you water, this is how you repot. Those things have value, but you're going to have a better relationship with your plants and just have more fun in the process if you know why you're doing all these things.
Yes. I love it. And now, is it something that's already open?
It's not open yet. So I'm working just slowly at it. Mm-hmm. But my hope is to have it by the end of August. So if people are interested, you can get on the wait list. And it's just dustyheggie.com/get-planty, or if you just go to dustyheggie.com, it'll pop right up for you. And there's a waitlist there. And then when you get on the waitlist, you'll get some emails about like the price point and FAQs and more information about each module, stuff like that.
And is it something that we do like as together as a group, or it's like at your own pace?
It's all self-paced. Yeah. So it's all self-paced, but it'll be on a drip schedule. So you'll get a few modules every week to be able to kind of work through it little by little, because I don't want it to be like, here's 14 modules of science and plant care. I want it to be able to be a fun experience.
That's really neat. I love it.
I'm really excited. Yeah. I don't think I've ever been quite so proud of something I've made, except maybe my kids. I'm pretty proud of them.
Yeah, you're proud of making humans.
I'm proud of those humans.
That's awesome. Well, Dusty, so fun to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here. Can I just say, blushing moment. It has been my goal to be on your podcast since 2013. I kid you not.
Really? You've been listening for that long?
Oh, I have for sure listened to every single episode available to me.
Gosh.
I know a whole lot about you. I hope that doesn't scare you.
That is so amazing to me. Yes, that's so sweet. So sweet. I don't even have any words. I appreciate
that. That's fine. It was a little scary to say aloud, a little awkward, but it's fine.
Well, thanks. 2013, that's a long time. Well,
yeah.
Congratulations on reaching your goal.
Thanks.
And I hope everybody gets in your plant course.
Me too. I'm really excited about it.
You should be. Did you love that? I really did. I bet that was a lot more interesting than you thought, especially if you're not a plant person. It was funny. I was telling my neighbor girls about this interview the day that it happened, and I was saying all the things that it sparked me to think about and how much I enjoyed it. And they were all like, I'm sorry, what? I misheard you. I thought you said it was about plants. I'm like, it was. So anyway, what will your strategy be to struggle well based on what Dusty said? Maybe you buy a golden pothos. That seems like an easy enough place to start. Maybe you get on the list to take Dusty's class. You can find the link to that in the show notes at momstrugglingwell.com/podcast. I love the question that her husband asked her. What would you want to do for free forever? If you are a mom who feels like you've kind of lost yourself and you don't know who you are, that's very regular. What would you do for free forever? What's the thing that everybody asks you questions about? What is so easy to you that you assume is easy for everybody else? It's probably not. And I'm not saying you need to start a business about it or whatever, but if you feel lost, take some of the cracks in your day as some of the little spaces of downtime and do something that really revitalizes you. Whatever that thing is that you do for free forever. Something that really struck me that Dusty said was regarding propagation and how when you've cut a plant, it doesn't try to work on getting bigger. It kind of goes into survival mode because you've cut it and it's trying to grow those roots and it just kind of shuts down on the outside and goes inward. That just has so much application to our lives, especially as mothers sometimes, especially as mothers whose kiddos are breaking our hearts. maybe we realize, those of us who are in those seasons, that it's time to get quiet. It's time to get inward and just really seek God's heart. And it's going to look like ain't nothing going on. You're not accomplishing anything. You're not looking bright and shiny. Who are you even? What do you even think you're doing? Well, I mean, maybe what you're doing is growing roots. And that's not just okay. It's better than okay. It's necessary and it's beautiful, but it's hard. So maybe stop pushing back against being in survival mode. Go inward, grow the roots. Maybe you could identify with what Dusty was saying about anxiety and depression, just like your body stopping working because of something that's gripped it that you can't get over on your own. I loved that her kids were the thing that she felt like was a good enough reason to look into that. Maybe that's a good enough reason for you if you are struggling with some of those things. I love that she first went to vitamins. Where am I deficient? What can I fix with vitamins? Doing activity, it's all so important. But if you're not feeling quite right, you're not making it up. Why would you make that up? Talk to somebody, get some help. I also loved what Dusty said about the traumatic birth and how sweet God was to her in that really hard season. I love the redemption of it happening a second time and her getting to have the stuff that she wanted in that birth experience. Even though it wasn't what she had planned, it ended up being really beautiful. We really do have very little control over our children and over our circumstances. And those times when we're reminded of that, they can be really scary, but they also can be really sweet because it forces us to realize who does have control and how good He is to us. So if your birth was traumatic, or if, like me, you didn't even get to have a delivery room experience, and I'm not trying to be flippant, and I'm not trying to in any way minimize how hard that can be, but if you're breastfeeding, if it just kind of did not go how you wanted, and you're kind of focused on that, it's such a small percentage of motherhood. I was going to be so granola, no medicine, only breastfeeding, certainly no C-section. I mean, I didn't even get any of that. And my kiddos were born addicted to substances. That was definitely not the plan. But I promise you, I'm a mother. So just if that's been a hard thing, be encouraged. You have the rest of your life to do mothering things. All right, ladies, well, that's everything I've got. I hope that you have a great week. I would love to talk to you on Instagram at momstrugglingwell. So please find me, send me a message. I do my very best to get back to everybody. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. However you listen to podcasts, do rate it. That would be so sweet. I love hearing some feedback. This is a pretty one-sided situation that I've got going on with this podcast. I am thankful for you, and I just want to tell you, you are doing a great job. You really are. Let me pray for us. God, I thank you for your faithfulness. I'm really thankful that your word says that you're close to the brokenhearted. When our lives feel like a mortar and pestle and we're just getting ground to a pulp, please help us to remember that you are good and you do good. And this is for our good. In Jesus' name, amen.